Hello.
Good evening.
Welcome to Retrocast in the evening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost after dark.
Almost. Well, it is
Not quite.
probably getting there.
It's getting there, yeah.
Oh, on your side, I still got about 2 hours left.
Yeah, we probably only have about another half an hour. If that.
So unfortunately, Chris couldn't join us.
Yeah, that's
I
too
was
bad.
disappointed you guys didn't get one out.
I wanted to. He's been quite busy.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's got going on, but I know that we tried to get something, what was it, 3 weeks ago, but I think there was only a couple. It was like more of the afternoon that I was available, and that wasn't working for him, and
Well,
that was true for both weekends.
this worked out okay because like you said, most people are going to be doing Mother's Day next week.
Yeah, it's gonna be. We're gonna. We don't even know what we've got going on, but
You're
we'll end up
probably
doing
gonna
something.
buy a lot of comics for Mother's Day, right? Isn't that what
That would
people
be
do for
good.
Mother's Day?
I think that they should.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, I think you should just say here's a good back issue list, and I think we should pick some off of it.
I think that's a good idea. You should have Harley get Barb some comic books for Mother's
Yeah,
Day.
some comics.
Yeah, why not?
Barb has comics everywhere, every day.
Oh,
She's
I've
the
heard.
happiest woman. She's so happily married.
I hear her
Right,
laughing.
Barb? Yeah. She's like, loves it. She loves every bit of. She likes. If there's not a comic in front of her, she's upset.
Yep. Like, where the hell are the comic books?
Did you get to go see Guardians yet?
No, I gotta talk to Stacy and see when is good, maybe this week. I know that you saw it, right?
I did. I liked it quite a bit.
I haven't heard anyone that didn't like it.
Daryl won't like it.
Well, he hasn't seen it though.
No, but he didn't like the first one, so he won't like the
Yeah.
second one.
But I've heard a couple people say that they actually like the second one better, which I'm stunned about.
The
Not
second
that
one,
they
I
do
think
anything.
has the second one I think has a stronger plot.
Does it?
But the overall plot. But it builds upon the first, so you have to have watched the first to understand the bonds that, these characters share with each other. So,
Right.
yeah, because it's a good heartfelt movie. It's fun.
That's cool.
You kind of have to be heartless like Daryl too.
He's not heartless. He cries during This Is Us.
That is true.
I
But
don't understand.
if it involves dancing and
He's out.
comedy, he does that. He's out. He wants everything to be grim and gritty. Like he hates like Batman 66 or even like when like one of the best cartoons I think that's been out is Batman Brave and the Bold.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's amazing. And he can't stand it. But it's
Why is
weird
that?
because well, it's lighthearted. Like it's lighthearted, but it's rich in DC history. It's very rich in it. Like the writers of that show love DC history. You could
Well, see, he should love it
see
then.
it. It's it's not dark enough.
Yeah.
He likes his Batman to be serious, yeah.
Do you think it hurts his face to smile?
Daryl?
Yeah.
No.
I'm just kidding.
It hurts sometimes. If he's watching his Guardians, it hurts for him to laugh.
Right.
Yeah. I know he won't like it.
Yeah.
Like he'll he shouldn't even waste his time going.
Yeah, I'm gonna see if we can go like on Tuesday or something.
You'll like it.
I know I'll like it.
Yeah, you'll like
I
it.
think Stacey will like it too because she loved the first one as
Oh,
well.
she'll love it. Yeah. It's
Yeah.
full of action and full of good stuff.
Did Barb like it?
Yeah, Barb liked it.
It's good.
Barb likes almost every movie we go to. There's
Really?
a few times. She doesn't like Iron Man 3 like I do.
I liked Iron Man 3. I didn't like Iron Man 2.
I agree. I think Iron Man 2 is the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But Iron Man 3, and people get mad at me because they think I'm poking the bear. Every time online, I'll say it. They think I'm trying to bug Daryl. It bugs the fuck out of me because Iron Man 3 is my favorite Marvel Universe movie. I've, like, watched that movie more than any other movie. Like,
really?
Yeah. I've like, watched it more than any other Marvel Universe movie. I can't wow. say more than DC because I've watched Superman 3 so many times. I like, know it by heart.
Yeah. No, I mean, I wouldn't say it's one of my
But look
top
at look at the movies I
movies,
like. But... Like nobody likes Superman 3, but I like that's my favorite one of my favorite DC movies.
Right.
Because it is so Silver Age. It's like opening up and reading like a Cary Bates script like from the 70s in Action Comics. It is so out there, man.
I can't tell you the last time I saw Superman 3.
Oh, and it has the best scene ever where Clark versus Superman in the garbage dump. I just think that's the best.
I barely remember anything about it. It was so long ago.
I didn't appreciate it when I saw it. When I was a kid, Superman was my thing. Like, that was one of my favorite movies of all time. And then Superman 2 came out, and I was blown away. Like, there's mm-hmm. so much that happens in Superman 2 that you're like, sitting at your seat. And, you know, you have Luthor, you have General Zod. He gives up his powers. I mean, there's so much going on.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right, yes.
It's, like, incredible. It's, like, one thing after another. Bang, 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 bang. And then I saw Superman 3, and I was like, what the hell?
that's Richard Pryor, right?
Yeah, and I didn't like it because it was funny. Like, it mm-hmm. was – and then as I grew older, I found out I was watching it more and more, and I like it more and more.
Maybe I have to give it another try because seriously, I mean, we saw it in the theater. I probably have seen it one other time, like after – when it was on HBO, like afterwards, yeah. you know, like all those years ago. And that was probably the last time I've ever seen.
You gotta go in with like knowing that it's total cheese.
Yeah.
But it's good cheese. It's not Lindberger or you know.
So what else is going on?
Not too much. I got to read a lot.
You were busy this whole month though, huh? Or last month rather.
Yeah, I podcasted a lot. Today and yesterday, with Daryl, I was on for, I don't know, 2.5 hours last night, and with Bill, almost 4 this morning.
Yeah, I saw that. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was fun.
Your voice gonna hold up?
Yeah.
I've got what might be a sinus infection. I can't tell. I'm gonna go to the doctor tomorrow.
Oh, what happened?
I don't know. My left ear is like all plugged up, and it has been since Friday night.
Blow your nose, man.
I've like been
hard.
Blowing it.
Do it hard. It's
not helping.
Gotta mean it.
So we gotta see what's going on.
Yeah. So you want to kick this off?
Yeah. Why don't we?
Yeah. I'm gonna do a lot, but I'm doing them like I'm not gonna go into depth. But
okay.
That's
fine. I've only got a couple, and then I can just briefly talk about it.
Some horror movies.
I watched one yesterday.
Yeah.
I can talk a little bit about that.
Okay. You want to go first, or do you want me to? I don't.
Why don't you go since you've got so many?
Well, I'll do the short one, the really short one.
Okay.
So I'm reading. Let's see. This is Golden Age Captain Atom from Charlton. And this particular one is from the 60s. It has Steve Ditko.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Space Adventures. God, I don't even know what number this is. It's one of those numbers. It's like the 4th issue of Captain Atom. But
Is the title called Space Adventures or Captain Atom?
Yeah, Space Adventures.
Oh, okay.
And I don't have the full copy of space adventures. As a matter of fact, there's only one space adventures I own. I
Do you
own
actually own this one?
No, this is in a collected edition. This is
Okay.
called the archive editions. You know how DC had the
Uh-huh.
archives back? This is
Yeah.
called the this is volume one of Action Heroes. It's
What's
like vo
on the cover of it so I can find it?
it's got Captain Atom in his yellow and red costume. Oh, you mean the cover of the issue I'm looking at?
Yeah,
This one has three women on it, and he's in space, and it's got a missile. Look at the first appearance of Captain Atom, and it's like the fourth one down from there. You'll see it. There's like three women. They're like from Venus.
I think I see it. Do they have blonde hair?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it. It looks like number 37.
So that's the issue I'm covering.
Okay.
And this like any other Golden Age book you read is they're like thick books. They're, I don't know, 50, 60 pages.
Yeah.
But the Captain Atom stories are only five, and
Oh.
there's two Captain Atom stories. The first and there's not like a lot of substance in these. Like, a matter of fact, the two stories are very similar. The ones I read prior to this were much more interesting, but this one had Captain Atom a as it's weird because he's Captain Atom, like he's Nathaniel Atom,
Right.
but he's also the superhero Captain Atom spelled differently. But his last name is Adam, Adam. So this is him as an officer. He's seeing like they're at Cape Canaveral, Florida, and there's a maximum security concrete blockhouse. And he sees the MPs have been knocked out. He's like, "What the hell's going on?" And there's a bunch of aliens, and they kind of zap him. And they're taking off with plans. So like, whatever these aliens were, they knew that there were like top secret plans inside of this building. So he changes to Captain Atom and essentially knocks that guy's plane out of the sky. He's pretty powerful. Like, I wouldn't say he's like godlike, like they've made him. In previous incarnations, like if you read New 52, Captain Atom, he's almost like Dr. Manhattan, like
Yeah.
godlike. And Dr. Manhattan was designed after Captain Atom.
I don't think I've ever read Golden Age, well, Golden Age or Silver Age, Captain Atom.
Did you read 80s? The one that came out of Crisis? Yeah, that Kerry Bates stuff, yeah. So this guy is very similar to that. The Kerry Bates stuff has way more depth. Like you won't read like a Charlton comic and say, "Wow, this." You kind of read it to get perspective on where the character and the background came from. But Kerry Bates like digs into all that history, and that was a long running series actually. It outlived Blue Beetle. It
And Blue
lasted
Devil,
pretty
which all
long,
like
yeah.
lasted almost around the same time. They all
Yeah.
started at like the same time.
But like Captain Atom went up to the 60s, I think. And he goes into space and there's like all kinds of spaceships. And he pretty much just blows the hell out of them. Like he goes atomic and it he put out the force of 100 megaton nuclear bomb in space. So there's like 100 ships just firing at him, and he goes megaton and blows all the ships up. Like in space, he goes nuclear. And then he comes down, and like he's good friends with the president at the White House. This is kind of funny. The president's there with a huge microscope looking into space, and he's like, "Hey, Captain Atom, I saw your courageous defeat of the aliens in space. But look, I see their home base is out there. Like there's a home ship." And he said, "Look at the size of that. You just blew these smaller ships out." And you know what Captain Atom does? This is funny.
What?
Through the lens of the telescope, he projects his powers to hit the ship from the ground
Sure, he does.
into space and
That's
blows the mothership.
how it works.
Yeah, it's crazy. That was the first story. The second story, There's like a rocket launch into space from Cape Canaveral to go observe Venus to see if it's, hospitable or can we live there and all that stuff. It's a military mission, and Captain Adam is there watching it, like he's tuned into the frequency, watching it, and all of a sudden he sees these three beautiful women, and they show up, and he's like, "Holy mackerel! They're attractive creatures. I can't believe what they're doing in space." And they, whatever they do, they disable the ship. And Captain Adam's like, "Well, I can't let them stop the mission because we need to gather the information. We spent millions of dollars on this rocket. I gotta go into space." And he comes across these three females. They look exactly alike. And, as powerful as Captain Adam is, one of the women from Venus pulls out a space laser gun and just shoots him out of the sky. And he lands on Earth, and he's like, he was the sh they turn the ship back on, and they say, we'll see you soon, but we're gonna disable your rocket." And he said, "Well, maybe we'll see them again, but it might not be for a few issues." But they just shot him with like a she just pulls a laser gun out and shoots him.
That
Yeah, that was it. And as I'm
was
thumbing through, I don't see these women ever again.
Oh, that was all, huh?
Yeah. But it's fun. This is fun stuff. Like there's two volumes of this, Action Heroes 1 and Action Heroes 2, and the Action Heroes 2 has like the Question and Blue Beetle, their first stories and such. Not the
I like
not
reading that old stuff.
Yeah, this has the Charlton stuff. Blue Beetle has a richer history than Captain Atom. He goes back to the like really golden age, and I think his first appearance is like from Fox Comics or something like that.
I think you're right.
So they acquired him somehow, or they said, "We don't want to do this character anymore," and Charlton acquired him. But they did put out the Question and Captain Atom and Judo Master, Peacemaker, some of their most popular ones. Nightshade, of course, because they're all analogous with the Watchmen. So you could take every Watchman and map them back to a Charlton hero. Like the comedian's Peacemaker.
That's kind of cool,
Yeah.
that they did that.
I'm glad that they kept it separate, though, because it allowed them
Oh, yeah.
to do the Watchmen and not have to worry about continuity because they injected all these characters into Crisis,
Exactly.
Yeah,
That's
it's
really
good
cool.
stuff. Yeah. I'm getting really addicted to collected editions, like more so than singles.
I
I don't I, I
know.
don't I don't know what's going on with me, man. But
I've been listening to your podcasts and stuff. I listened to your what was it? Was the last well, it wasn't the last one that you did.
Mike M's or
Yeah, but it was the one before where you're talking about your intervention.
Oh yeah, that was two episodes ago, at number 50. I had the intervention, but man, it's not going too well. I mean, it's going okay, but Barb's shaking her head like, "You bastard."
I've been trying to pull back too, but you know what's funny is that a lot of the things that you said is I'm kind of trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like I'm not dropping, like I don't get as much DC as you do. I get all the DC proper minis and regular series, but I do get the kids ones, but I get those for the kids.
Have you read though, like Scooby-Doo Team-Up? God
Yeah.
dang.
So, like, I'll
Sholly
read up.
Fish is awesome. That writer, I don't know much about him, but what I do know is that guy knows DC history. Did you read the Starman issue? You
No, not. Oh, wait, did I? I
need to
can't
dig that
remember. I
out.
don't think so.
It
You know what the
doesn't have
problem is?
Starman on it. It's called Scooby-Doo Team-Up with Martian Manhunter. But it is
No,
so
I didn't.
awesome. There's a
Didn't.
scene in there where he references every single Starman. Like he runs into Starman, he says, "Are you the alien that's into drugs or not?" He doesn't say it like that, but the psychedelic one. He goes through
Right.
every single incarnation. It's
That's
pretty
really cool.
awesome.
But like, so, you know, the I don't get that much Vertigo anymore. Some of the other stuff, maybe I'm not getting, but you know, DC pretty much I'm buying all of it. Valiant, yeah. I'm buying all of it. But it was funny to listen to you because Marvel, I'm not saying, like, if there's a series that comes that looks interesting or I want to pick up, I'll pick it up. But at the same time, that seems to be where a lot of this, like, as things end, I'm like, okay, it's over with now, and I that, you know, I don't pick up a new number one the following month or whatever, unless it's, you know, it's something that I really, really liked. I'm starting to drop a lot of those Marvels, and Image, I'm picking and choosing which ones do I really enjoy and which ones am I just reading out of habit.
Yeah. But
it's really hard. It's hard to drop a lot of books.
Image for me is a little different. I'm trying not to get into more of the new stuff and then let the other stuff, keep the old stuff that I'm into.
Yeah.
Like I'm so into like the older properties now, like Spawn and Savage Dragon. Like I'm having a second rebirth of love for them.
So. All because of that documentary that you watched.
It injected a lot in there for me. It's amazing what a documentary will do. Cause like I posted that the Negro comic thing from that documentary, you know, being the first
African American
written and drawn.
I did not know anything about that.
Oh, I didn't either. Until you know, I guess what I did. I bought it. No, but I didn't buy. I bought the reprint. I wasn't gonna buy the original.
I'm like, oh my god.
I found out there was a reprint done, and I was like, this is gonna be a fascinating historical read because
it's history.
Oh, it's 1947.
And to know that they didn't have another.
Because a black character for like 20 years. Because they
didn't
like the way they were portrayed. They were trying to push them down. Yeah, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm interested to read. So like even these Captain At, I a lot of this is for history, and I get a kick out of it. Like I want to know the origins of everything I possibly could know. Like
Yeah,
if it was up to me, I'd read every single comic ever published. But that ain't going to happen. There's just way too much.
Exactly.
Unless I somehow become immortal, then I might have a shot. My mutant gene hasn't kicked in yet.
It needs to start going there,
All right, so what do you got?
Well, you know, I just want to mention, too, real quick, that I went there was a small little one-day hotel con last Sunday.
Oh yeah,
and it's the you know the local comic book shop puts that one on in addition to the one in the fall that's at the convention center.
Yeah,
because it started here, you know, just at a hotel, just on Sundays and stuff. So now in the spring he does that for one day, and then he does the convention one in the fall. So I went and walked around and looked around and stuff, and hearing Nick and especially Martin. Talk about Wildstorm and Stormwatch and stuff all the time.
Yeah.
I've never read any Stormwatch at all. So nothing, not one issue. So as it stands right now between an order that I placed on Atomic Avenue about a month or so ago and then this past Sunday, I'm only missing maybe about 3 or 4 issues of the first volume, which went up to 50.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only missing one issue of the second volume, which was only 11 issues.
Yeah.
But so I got all of those.
Are you missing the first appearance of Midnighter and Apollo?
Of course, because all the rest of them were in the dollar bins. So I just grabbed them all. I'm like, one, well,
that's
two,
the, that's
three,
the most
five, six. I'm like, where's number
one.
Four?
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about it. And then I looked it up. I'm like, oh, well, this explains why it wasn't in the dollar bin. It was first Midnighter, first Apollo. So our database shows that for Near Mint it's $135, but it looks like I can get it much cheaper than that.
I got it for much cheaper, and I'm not that far off from you. In other words, I just completed my Stormwatch about a year ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm really anxious to complete this and then read all of them because I've read – the two collections, the Warren Ellis collections of The Authority.
Yeah.
So I already had read that without having read any of Stormwatch. Uh-huh. So, and I know that, like, a ton of this isn't necessarily him at the beginning, but sure. I still want to read it from the beginning and all the way through and just get into it.
Mm-hmm. That'll be you fun. Know?
Yeah. So anyhow, the book that I'm – oh, you know what? I also got two Flash issues, so I only need a couple more to have like from somewhere like 216 and up. It's just
– of the first volume?
Yeah, the first volume. Yeah. I was just, you know, in terms of getting books here and there, I just had a lot of them around 216. And so there's a big gap between 216 and the next book that I have. So I'm just trying to get all of those. And I think I only need two or three more now.
So you'll have from 216 up.
216 up. And then, I have the whole second volume with Wally. So,
year was 216?
Doing pretty well.
That's funny. 216 is like the only one I'm missing. Like
really?
That I must. I have everything sequentially from 210 up. I mean, from 217, and then I'm missing 216, 209, 207, 205.
Yeah, like.
And then
I don't have 216. I've got 217 and up, so I'm missing 216 as well.
Ah.
But then I have, like, before that, I've got, like, 211 and, like, 205, and it's just hit or miss. So, I only need – actually, it looks like I only need two more. I wasn't sure how
much. I'm missing a lot of the 52-page Giants is what I'm missing.
Yeah.
If you look at the ones that I have, they're the regular size, but, like, 216 is the 25-cent Giant size. 205 is a Giant size. You know?
So yep.
Like, you yeah, know, 196 is a Giant size. So I'm missing, like, the Giant size, but I have the others. Giant size are hard to find in a good condition.
Because
they
absolutely.
Have that square bound and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're a little tougher.
Yeah. That's funny. I've got 204 and 205, but then I don't have anything until 211. All right, so I'm gonna the book I'm gonna cover first, and this is you and Daryl inspired me the other a couple weeks ago. It's Namor the Submariner number one.
Oh, nice, the John Byrne one.
The John Byrne one, because this was back in 1990, and so I was either a senior in high school or I graduated from high school. I don't know when exactly this came out during the year, but. I was a big John Byrne fan up to this point. I mean, everything that he was doing, I was really enjoying. So when I saw this, it's kind of skeptical because I wasn't a huge Namor fan, but picked it up and I absolutely loved it. And I bought the entire run and beyond when he was doing the writing and the art.
Yeah.
And I kept going for a while, but I did eventually drop off of it. Before it ended on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of amazing when you think about it. I'm looking it up now, and it went 62 issues for Namor to have his own title for basically 5 years.
Yeah, that could never happen nowadays. He had that earlier one, too, that had an okay run right after Tales from Astonish, where he came from.
Oh, right. Yes, he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it looks like John Byrne did 32 issues, and I stopped getting it at issue 51. So I only missed the last 11 issues.
Yeah.
But this was good, as you know, because you and Daryl were talking about it. This particular issue, issue one, is a big setup issue. Basically, he's coming out of the water, and he's kind of going nuts just on a tropical island, destroying some natives, effigies and scooping them all up and throwing them on top of their thatched roof building and stuff and swinging their totem poles around and scaring them all. And finally, this father-daughter team that does a lot of diving and stuff finally stop them and get them to calm down. And as it turns out, the older gentleman, the father, he had been studying Namor pretty much for his whole life and had a theory that if he's out of the water too long or if he's in the water too long, then that's when he becomes very irrational.
Mm-hmm.
Basically saying that, you know, if he's in the, because he's half, you know, he's half human and half Atlantean, that if he's out of, if he's in the water for too long, he starts to suffer a little bit from oxygen deprivation. Yeah. And then if he's on the land for too long, he's getting too much oxygen.
So he has to find a balance. That's
so he needs to, yeah. So he needs to.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and so he hooks him up to this machine that kind of like circulates his blood and gets him to the right level of oxygen,
mm-hmm.
and you know, calms him down and stuff. And then they decide it goes into Nemo's whole history, really, of, you know, how his dad being a human and his mother being Atlantean had gotten together and so on. And like I said, this is a real big setup issue, because then it goes into the scientist's backstory as well a little bit, and how when he was a young kid, he actually, like I said, he was obsessed with Nemo, and Nemo was flying by during, it was World War II, and he wasn't paying attention. He was just trying to follow him as fast as he could on his bike and just went right off the dock and into the water, and Nemo actually saved his life, and he never forgot that. So the next thing that after this talk, Nemo comes back to the father-daughter team. And I don't remember their names, but I'm not finding them right here. But they're the Alexanders, I know that. So a couple weeks later, he comes back to them with an old sunken treasure chest from a rock. Of course, he opens it up, and there's all these jewels and gold and everything. He's like, all right, I want to finance a whole corporation that's basically going to try to fight like the polluting of the oceans and, you know, supporting the ecology and environmental practices. And
yeah, that's a big deal. That corporation is a big part of that series.
Oh, it's a huge part, right? Yeah. The whole beginning is, I mean, him with a suit and stuff like that. And so he wants these two, the Alexanders, to go ahead and help him out with this. And he's named
What is the name company. Of it again?
The name of the company?
Yeah.
Oracle.
Ah.
Because that was the name of the ship that his dad had been on.
Uh-huh.
And that's the name of the ship that the Alexanders named their own boat after because of that fact, because it was such a historian.
I don't know if they mentioned this in number one or not, but there's like a rivalry corporation that is dumping oil into the water. I mean,
They only start getting into – it's only like the last two pages. Basically,
but do you remember the name of it?
Let's see if it says here. I don't know if it's called
because
the Mars.
That name is
Mars?
A big. That name is like a big deal in, like, it's even come up on the TV shows.
Let me see if I can find it.
Ronson Corporation, I can't remember.
Roxxon,
yeah.
Well, these two.
It showed up in Daredevil season two.
Yeah, I know Roxxon's been in a lot of stuff. These maybe this is something different then, because it's just two siblings, a twin boy and girl.
Oh, okay.
At the end of this one, and I can't find – I know their last name is Mars, but I can't find to see what the name of their corporation is. But basically, she walks in on her brother about to shoot himself in the head, and it's because he's really bored and he's got no challenges. And so they're like – she's trying to convince him, listen, you can't do this, you know. And then she said, you know, I just read about – he's like, there's plenty of things to do. I just read about – this old conglomerate that's been taken over by a father-daughter team, and they're a front for a mystery man that nobody knows about. Of course, we know that that's Namor. And then the last thing is just like, what did you say the purchasing company was called? And she says, Oracle Incorporated. So it's like I said, 100% set up. Namor literally does not, except for as he's scaring those natives that Pacific Island, there's like literally no fighting whatsoever. But it was definitely enjoyable to reread this after so many years. And sometime down the road, I'm going to grab the whole run that I have downstairs in the basement, and at least the whole John Byrne part of the run, and reread the whole, all 32 issues.
Yeah, I'm only missing one issue.
And, for the whole run?
No, the John Byrne. The whole run I'm missing like in the 60s, like the last five. But I'll complete it at some time. A matter of fact, Prince Namor the Submariner, or the first volume, that was one of the series that like I started off of Defenders, but I never finished. Like it I have I'm missing only like five issues from that.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I
this
sh I
was
I should finish it, 'cause those are the ones, Prince Namor and Daredevil were the two that I wanted to really finish, and I just, oh, squirrel kind of thing. Just never got so damn close and never finished it.
just remember reading this, like
What a great
there
cover,
was
though. The cover's awesome. Like
of the of number one.
his position, like
Oh,
the way
yeah.
his arms are clutched and he's just like blasting out of the water, it just looks awesome. Like he
What is
killed the
John Byrne
cover.
doing these days?
John Byrne is doing Star Trek photo copies for IDW.
I know he's
Have you
done
heard
stuff for IDW.
about the Star Trek photo stuff? What he does is he
Not at
doesn't
all.
draw, he writes, but he writes the Star Trek stuff, taking old film footage and putting it into a comic.
Why doesn't he draw anything anymore?
I don't know. He was doing some stuff for IDW. He had a
Yeah,
couple
on
of,
and off, he had like a smaller little
yeah, he had a couple of series out of there. They didn't last long, but
Yeah. His own creations, I think, right?
yeah.
Yeah. He was great. I loved him in the 80s and into the 90s.
Yeah, he was a big part of that era for sure. He was the hot ticket.
Oh yeah, from X-Men, Alpha Flight, this, Superman.
Yep.
Oh God. So
Fantastic
much.
Four.
Fantastic Four, of course. How could I
Yeah.
forget Fantastic Four? That was great.
Yeah,
What else?
he's pretty good. My next one is a tribute to the Guardians of the Galaxy. I read Tales to Astonish number 13, and I didn't know what to expect with this, but one thing I did is I really enjoyed it. Like I thought it was gonna be tough to read and dense, but it's really a short story, and I just read the Groot story because I wanted to read the first appearance of Groot.
That's cool.
So
Now,
the
this is
cover,
another collection.
this is the Monsters Omnibus. They call it a Monster Bus by Stan Lee, Larry Lieber, and Jack Kirby. It
Gotcha.
is volume one. And what this thing focuses on is the monster era of Marvel.
Yeah.
And the series that they go into is they had the Strange Worlds, Worlds of Fantasy, Journey into Mystery, Tales to Astonish, Tales of Suspense, and Strange Tales. Those eventually turned into superhero titles. But before they were superhero titles, they were monster titles.
Now let
Before.
me ask you a question, because it's Groot. Is he similar to what Groot is in the superhero comics, or is he kind of Groot in name only?
He's kind of Groot in name only. Well, look. Look and look.
I see
He's
that he looks like a tree.
yeah, he is. So he's similar in that, and he's other than that, no. And he's the complete opposite. He's not a hero.
Oh, okay. He's just
He's
a monster.
a monster. So what happens is Groot comes down to Earth, and he's from Planet X, and he talks. He doesn't just say, "I am Groot." And what he starts to do, it starts off like Superman, like Ma and Pa Kent driving, and they see an ex something land, and they're like, maybe we should go check that out. No, we're too busy. So it's this, they're not old. It's a young couple. She is pretty hateful to him. Like they're in the car and they're driving, and she's saying, honestly, that George Carter is a wonderful guy. He's so manly, so rugged. If only you were more like that, Leslie. And she just, the whole comic, she's just like giving him shit. Like,
Are
doesn't
they boyfriend
appreciate him
girlfriend or are they
as a
married?
man. I think they're boyfriend girlfriend. He should dump her ass. Dump her ass. Like, I like hate this woman.
Iris does that to Barry all the time in the old the first, like the old Silver
Yeah,
Age.
but Barry kind of does some stuff. Like he's always late. He always does stuff. This guy's done nothing wrong. Absolutely nothing. He makes good money. He's a biologist. He's not doing anything wrong. He's just treated bad. But he says he tells her he wants to go check out what happened in the forest after a day passed because trees are missing in somebody's yard, the neighbor's yard. And she spoke with her friend Claire, and their whole wooden fence is gone. So he's like, I'm gonna go check where that thing exploded and see what's going on. And I just love her dialogue. She goes, "All right, but it would do you more good to walk there. Might toughen you up a little, harden your muscles." She's like giving him shit the whole time.
Yeah,
So
I'm
he goes
surprised she
out
didn't
there and
say, you
sees a,
know, lose some weight or something.
yeah, he sees a glowing Groot. And what Groot is doing is he's absorbing every wooden anything made out of wood. It's just sucking into him. Like he's just getting bigger and bigger, and he's sucking all the wood in. And so he goes to the cops. He's like, "Crap, we gotta do something. We got an alien." And the sheriff is like, "You crazy?" He doesn't believe him until his deputy come in and says, "Hey, there's a glowing monster that's gonna destroy us." And so they all go out there with their shotguns and they're gonna attack him, but Groot explains what he's there for. He's from the Dimension X, and he wants to take the whole village into space with them and study them. So people, buildings, and everything. And the way he's gonna do this is form a ship out of trees. And I don't know how it's like the propulsion system. I don't know how these people are gonna survive in space. But I guess the trees produce oxygen, so I guess I don't know.
Right. Do you read
I
Saga?
yeah, I guess
They're
they can.
flying around in a tree.
I guess they're gonna. I
I
guess they can do that.
guess
So
so.
that's his plan. He's gonna do that. And these guys are firing their guns. They're bouncing off, and the sheriff's like, "Well, let's burn it. It's wood. It'll catch fire." But I guess he's so powerful that the fires doesn't do anything. It doesn't even start him on fire. Meanwhile, the biologist goes back, and he's studying. He's like, "How can I take this creature out?" And his girlfriend comes in to bitch at him, right? She says, "What are you hiding in here for? Why aren't you out with the other men trying to stop that monster? Must be weak and spineless to the bitter end," she tells him.
Yikes.
She's awful. But what he develops is a super termite. Super termites, and he takes down Groot. Not only does he take him down, he kills him.
Wow.
So Groot is dead.
That's it. No more
And
group.
then at the end, she tells him, "Oh, darling, forgive me. I've been such a fool. I'll never complain about you ever again." I just love the dialogue. Like, her dialogue was the best.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's Groot. And yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. Obviously, this comic, Tales to Astonish, is a big comic. It's another, I don't know, 60 pages or so. It has multiple stories. Groot's story is probably only 8 or 10 pages.
Did you read the whole book or just that
No,
story?
just that story, because this one only, this omnibus is every book that focuses on the monsters. Like,
Okay, that makes
if
sense.
there was another sci-fi story in there or something that
They
didn't
didn't
have
include it.
monsters, they didn't include it.
You know what? That drives me crazy a little bit that like I understand why they do it, but somewhere I would love to read the entire like Detective Comics 27. And I've only read the Batman story.
Yeah.
You know, like read all the other stories that were in there
And
for
some of those stories are gems if you read like Golden Age. It gets some Slam Bradley and all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, I would love to have like a just a total copy of it, including the ads and everything, and just kind of put you in the frame of mind of when it came out and
That
stuff.
might exist.
We'll have to take a
Have
look.
you looked at the millennial editions? Have you heard of these things? They're
I'll have to take a look.
single issues, but I think they have this stuff.
Oh, that'd be great. I'll have to take a look. It's
They
just
have a
interesting.
cool the millennial editions have really cool stamps on them. Like they look like they're part of the cover. But it looks like an official stamp, like a gold seal. It almost looks like a notary public seal that's stamped on the book.
I totally can picture it.
Yeah. I wish I had more of them. I only have like three of them, but they've. Back in the 90s, they did these millennial editions, and I think they're actually worth money now. Like, not a lot of money, but they're worth way more than what you paid for them at the time.
Yeah.
And they're totally reprints, but God, I can't remember if they had the ads and the entirety of the comic. I can't remember. I think they did.
I'll have to research that and see.
But that's like any archive you get, like even the Captain Atom, like those space
Yeah.
adventures have more stories, but you can't read it in its entirety. But
And
at
it, you
least
know,
you
it
get the
makes,
character, you know,
well,
like the
that's the thing. It
character
makes
breakdown.
sense. You know,
Yeah.
if you're getting Captain Atom, then why would they put all these other random stories in there, you know?
Yeah.
But like what bothers me is like you can get like if you buy Detective Comics 27 digitally on Comixology, it only gives you that story.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
I'm getting Detective Comics. I'm not just getting a 5-page, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like that I don't understand. But like if you're getting a collection of Captain Atom, then, you know, sure, it's only going to have Captain Atom.
Yeah.
That's all right.
I'm gonna tell you a secret about Barb.
Okay.
You know the two movies she loves and she'll like watch over and over again, like over and over again. I kid you not. I swear to God, I won't even be in the room and I'll come downstairs and she'll be watching these things. She Man of Steel and
Okay.
Batman versus Superman. They're like her shit. Like
All by herself.
she will watch this. She's had to see Man of Steel at least 20 times and probably Batman versus Superman at least 10. She's watching it again
That is not what I thought you were going to say.
as we're speaking. I was like, man, she's watching it again. She's seen those movies more than I have. No,
I thought you were going to tell me like the Notebook or something like
it's not the Notebook.
that.
It's those two movies. I kid you not. It's either that or there's a comedy with God dang, what is that? Meet the Millers or something like that? We're the Millers? Have you
Oh,
heard
I
of
don't
that
know that.
comedy?
Mm-mm. No, I don't know
Yeah, she'll watch that thing over and over again too.
that Well, good for her.
Yeah.
I
What'd you say? Yeah, keep you're with Daryl on this, huh? You're like, I want this dark stuff. She told me
No.
you could keep your Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's very funny.
But yeah, I didn't expect to like it. I really didn't. But I was like, hey, I saw Guardians. Why don't I read Groot's first appearance? And I don't own it. It's obviously an expensive book.
Yeah, that's cool. And you know what's funny is that without me knowing what you were picking,
Yeah.
the next book that I'm going to cover, it's not his first appearance, but it is issue number one in a 4-issue limited series of Rocket Raccoon. Because you can't cover
Oh,
Groot without covering Rocket Raccoon.
that's right.
Isn't that funny? It's like I picked those first thing this morning when I woke up.
You know, I
You know,
don't own
seriously.
that.
No? It's not his first appearance. I guess he was
I
in
know that's
12
Incredible
issues.
Hulk.
Yeah.
Incredible Hulk has his first appearance. But you know what also is cool, at least I think it's helpful, is they say that his creation of Rocket, like Matt Lowe's done a lot of stuff.
Yes.
The strange thing is the thing that kicked off the most for him and is actually helping with his medical bills, because he's kind of like in a coma state, you know, like his brother's
Yeah.
taking care of him. But is Rocket Raccoon.
Yeah, I heard that he's being sent back home for the first time in
Oh, really? I didn't know
yeah,
that.
something was just shown because and it actually referenced Rocket Raccoon. Said because,
Wow.
you know, that I don't know, it sounded like Marvel redid some sort of deal or
Yeah.
something. I mean, I could be wrong, but that's what I didn't read the whole article. I just kind of saw the little blip, I think, on Twitter. But yeah, that he's coming back home, and
Yeah.
that it's thanks to Rocket Raccoon and some sort of because we know that Marvel doesn't tend to bank pay their creators very much for their movie appearances.
DC, yeah.
So I don't know if they, being his situation, if they change stuff
around. Helped him out a little bit. Well, did you watch the Heroes Decoded, the Superheroes Decoded?
Yes, I
Volume
did.
Volume 1 and 2?
Yes.
Did you see how much Neil Adams helped those guys out when nobody wanted to give them money? I mean, that you got to have props for that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen that in a couple of documentaries, but they did a lot with that in this one. They talked about Neil Adams being like the chair of some comic association and
yeah, and I had no idea about that at all.
Yeah. That was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, Siegel and Schuster, right?
They had nothing. I mean,
yeah, one of them was practically blind or something.
Yeah. They were poor. I mean, it's sad to think, you know, you think this iconic thing like Superman, and these guys could have died dirt poor, like,
yeah,
and forgotten.
It's kind of, it is really sad. It's like, I understand that they make a deal. You know,
we all do. If I develop something right now, it's not going to, and it's related to what I work in.
Mm-hmm. If they make $1 billion off of it, are they going to start giving you more money?
No.
No, but and it's the same way where everyone else. But it also seems. I mean, it just seems
cruel.
Incredibly unfair because
yeah,
Superman everywhere, and
that's
yet
right.
To see that this person's not going to get any money out of it,
right.
It just doesn't seem. I mean, especially in our country, you know that. What do you mean they're not getting any money out of it? It just doesn't seem fair. So, I don't know.
So that's cool that you picked Rocket.
Yeah, so
I'm glad.
I only read issue one. I didn't have time to read all of them this morning. And I haven't read this since it came out, which was in 1985.
I'm actually surprised you bought it in 1985.
Yeah, I don't know. It looks cool. There was a little raccoon shooting a gun. So I'm like, all right, I'll check this out. It was odd, though. So,
are you a Teenage Mutant Ninja fan?
I was at that time.
Okay, so that maybe
like I still buy it
talking now. Talking animals were like mm-hmm. Okay, that's cool.
I think I bought my first Ninja Turtles comics probably around the same year, 1985.
Yeah, Rob was like, "Hey, adolescent Ninja Blind Turtles, whatever.
Exactly. So this is Bill Mantlo, as you know, for story, and Mike Mignola was on pencils. So it is a very, very strange book. Basically, there's this this whole like area of the galaxy where it's all these talking animals, and there's basically an asylum where these crazy, crazy actual people, like humans, live. And without getting too much into it, because the first issue didn't, they say multiple times that these animals, it's their job to caretake for these humans.
Yeah.
So this asylum is considered almost like a temple or a shrine. And they're acting as if they're, you know, devotees to this shrine instead of just being crazy people. So anyhow, throughout what starts out with this is they're basically two toy makers, one in each area that make toys for these crazy people to keep them happy. And in the very beginning, one of the two toy makers, who looks like a lizard or an iguana or something like that, gets killed by a crazy looking clown. And the clown comes out, and all these like samurai monkeys try to beat him off. They can't get him. Then the head of this, the leader of this planet, talks to these rabbits, and it's Blackjack O'Hare and his Black Bunny Brigade. They come after the clown and end up killing him. But he's a machine. It's not a person. So They start investigating, and they ask Rocket Raccoon to investigate what's going on because they can't, now that one of these toy makers is dead, it's going to make so the loonies, these crazy people, aren't going to get all of their entertainment that they need to keep them happy. So that's what he's going to do. He ends up going in his rocket with one of his buddies, who is a walrus, who is removable tusks that he can put in tusks that are like that shoot like lasers, or put in tusks that do something else to help him fly the rocket, and so on and so forth. So it's very strange. Then in the meantime, you also have an old turtle who sneaks into this into the loony place, which is called the Cuckoo's Nest. And he steals their sacred book, which is the Half World Bible. And so when they see that there's nothing there, they're losing it as well. So in the meantime, Rocket is going back to this other land, and the other toy maker is a mole, and he makes all of these crazy looking clowns. And what you see here is the walrus and Rocket just a huge fight against these clowns to get to the mole. And pretty much that's where the first issue ends, is they manage to defeat all of those clowns. And the leader of the other world, the first world, has for some reason captured Rocket Raccoon's girlfriend, who is an otter. So that's the very, very end, is what is he going to do next? He's got to go rescue his girlfriend, or capture the mole that had the other toy maker killed. So honestly, this was absolutely bizarre. I didn't remember anything about this from reading it when I was a kid. I honestly wouldn't say that I loved this. This is probably like a 3 out of 5. I'm really in no like real, real hurry to read the other 3 issues, to be honest with you. It was a little more strange than what I expected. And like I said, I don't remember anything about this at all. And so the only thing that I really remember about Rocket Raccoon prior to reading this is just what you've seen in Guardians of the Galaxy in the past, you know, several years. Mike, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, so that's about it.
I was bidding on his first appearance as we were talking.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, good. I was in a heated battle and I lost. It was like 1 minute left. And it was Marvel Previews, Santana. His first appearance was in a black and white magazine.
Mm-hmm. How much did it go for?
I never have been in a bid for something in the last minute. So literally, you just you said Rocket Raccoon, and then you started talking about the story, and I was like, well, you know that Incredible Hulk I thought was his first appearance, and then I was like, wow, it's not. It's in this magazine. And because it was in this magazine, I was like, you know what? I want to look at it on eBay. It's number 7, Marvel Preview number 7. And I was, God dang, that's a beautiful cover. Because these Marvel magazines, I don't know if you've ever dealt in them, but they're artistically, they're pretty phenomenal. I mean,
no, I've never seen them.
I own some of them. I own the Doc Savage, and I own some of the Marvel previews and some of the other stuff, and some of the Deadly Hands of Kung Fu magazine.
Mm.
But
how much was did this one go for that you did?
It went for, I think, $140.
Oh wow! So it's a little bit more pricey than it probably.
But it was affordable at the 1 minute mark. It was at the 100 mark. So oh, okay. within 1 minute, less than a minute, it went to like past 140.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I've ever been in like a heated one. Like, I usually put my max in there, and I was like trying to outbid this fucker.
Just couldn't do it.
Yeah, this is such a cool thing to have.
It is. I didn't realize it's a magazine size too. It's interesting.
I thought it was that Hulk issue. I really did. And I was surprised to see it was the magazine. But Star-Lord's in the magazine, too. The black and white magazine.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
So I guess it makes sense.
Yeah.
I could have bought the Star-Lord one. I just wasn't smart. Because back at my shop when he had that huge collection, that thing was on the wall.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. The Star-Lord one.
Yeah.
So, oh well, maybe some other day.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe at Heroes. Who knows?
Maybe at Heroes.
So, just to change it up a bit, because my last one's Guardians related too, but I'm going to talk quickly about All-Star Comics number 58.
Sure. And then we have some questions too, I saw.
Have you read this?
No, I didn't.
This is the first time in the 70s where they brought back the Justice Society.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't.
And it has got a really cool cover. So this actually, like, you asked a great question about, like, Aquaman, you know, why he wasn't in the Justice League and all that stuff.
Yeah, it just seemed like a natural fit.
Yeah, well, they weren't the same company. I mean, DC has become itself from acquisitions. I mean, if you look at Quality Comics and American Publications and Charlton,
you know what threw me off though, Mike, is that I just assumed without looking up anything that Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman were all the same, you know, company.
Yeah.
And so I knew that Batman and Superman were quote unquote honorary members, but weren't really, didn't appear. But I'm like, well, Wonder Woman was in it all the time, so surely Aquaman.
That's because she came from that side.
Right, and I never knew that. I just assumed that Wonder Woman was on the same side as Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
But I guess she wasn't.
Yeah, her first appearance was in All-Star Comics.
Yeah, so that's just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
That,
have you,
you
ever
know, made
seen,
sense. But.
Have you ever seen comic book villains?
What is it?
It's a movie. It's amazing. You need to see this.
Okay. No, I never.
It is about two comic book shop owners that want to kill each other. It's amazing. Over a collection. So this, the plot of comic book villains is there is a, it actually has the guy who plays Harvey in Gotham. Harvey Bullock,
the guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's one comic shop owner. He's the poor guy. And then there's a rich, a cleaner store. So the poor guy has like this beat up shop. The other guy has a really nice looking shop with his wife. And what happens is there's a guy in town. Okay. He lives with his mom. He's in his 50s or 60s. He has a heart attack.
Uh-huh.
And these guys find out about it through the same kid. Okay, so they know this collection is amazing. Like, it's phenomenal. It's got the first Wonder Woman, the first Superman, everything in this collection. And the whole story is about them trying to acquire it from the woman, the mother. And it is a dark comedy. Just saying.
I just put it on my watch list.
Oh,
it's on Amazon to watch. It's not free, but it's only $2.99. So
it's pretty freaking awesome. It's one of my favorite movies, just because it's so ingrained in the culture that I love, and it's just so over the top because I could see this happening. because the collection he had was worth millions, man.
Yeah.
It was worth millions. He had everything pristine condition.
Yeah, I want to watch that, though.
It's phenomenal. But All-Star Comics 58, really cool. They talk about Earth 2 versus Earth 1. It sets the situation up. So we're definitely in Earth 2. It makes sure that you know that Earth 2 started its heroes like around World War II. Earth 1 started its heroes much later, you know, in the 70s, after the war, or 60s. So, like, you know, decade, 15, 20 years later, the Heroes of Earth 1 appeared. This one focuses on Flash, Hawkman, Dr. Midnight, Wildcat, Dr. Fate, Alan Scott, Green Lantern, and does Star Spangled Kid. This one you're going to get a kick out of because Star Spangled Kid has a relationship to Starman in this.
Oh.
And Robin and Power Girl. So these guys, the scene opens up as the world's going to end. We have to figure out why the world is going to end. And they're looking at a monitor, and Dr. Midnight's describing it. They don't know why, but they have to go, and they have to break up in teams. All-Star Comics is notorious for this. Like, it drives Campbell crazy.
Yeah.
It drives me a little bit. But they'll split up into teams. So they go split up into teams. Like, Hawkman goes with – it's weird the teams they choose. They choose the two most powerful ones. In my opinion, Dr. Fate and Alan Scott to be together, and then Flash and Wildcat, and then Dr. Fate and Hawkman, and they go to like China. They go to Gotham, and man, I can't. Oh, South Africa is the other place they go, and I guess South Africa. There's a that's where Star Spangled Kid is, and it gives a really good explanation. He's got the cosmic rod that Starman has.
Oh, wow.
Starman handed him the cosmic rod. Much like...
I see it on the cover.
Yeah. Much like Stargirl got the staff from
Jack.
Mm-hmm. So this even digs into the history where you're like, holy shit, that's cool, right? I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah. So do you have... Is this a single issue or is this a collection?
This particular one I have in both.
Okay.
But I'm reading it in a showcase.
Okay.
So I have a complete run of All-Star Comics, not from number one. I wish, but it starts at 58.
Okay.
Which is this first issue. I have all
that's,
this.
That's worth some money, too.
I actually bought this one off the shelf.
Wow. All the rest of them are,
I bought
this
off the rack. And, this is my reread. I remembered nothing of it as a kid,
mm-hmm.
other than the characters that I had, and the cover's iconic in my brain. Like, when you're a kid and you love comics so much, there's certain covers that they're ingrained in your brain. Like, you'll just know it when you see it. And this cover's one of them for me. But it's really cool because this introduces the concept of the Super Squad, like Legacy. I mean, we love DC Legacy. And it's like these are older heroes, and the Super Squad is based on this younger generation. It's based on Kara, which is, from Earth 2's Superman's cousin, Power Girl.
Yep.
A Star Spangled Kid, and Robin, the Dick Grayson Robin. And it's weird because Brainwave is, and if you've been reading the Infinity Inc., you'll know the link to Brainwave.
Yep.
But Brainwave is the villain here, and he's causing like natural disasters in all these places. And he plotted it for the JSA, but it's like these three heroes are what the determining factor to turn the tide. And this issue does not complete its continued next issue, and I didn't read it, but Power Girl reveals to Wildcat and Flash that the villain behind it is Brainwave. Like, she knows.
Mm.
And they're like, how did Superman keep you a secret for so long? And they're like, well, Kal-El. It's cool how they spell Kal-El. It's different. It's K-A-L-L. It's not E-L.
Oh. Uh-huh.
So Golden Age Superman is spelled differently. But cool issue. So they all go off on their ways. They get defeated. It's weird because the ones that get defeated the worst are the most powerful. Like Green Lantern and Dr. Fate. Those are big guns, man.
They're
like in nobody. They're nowhere near like Wildcat. Wildcat's a boxer, man.
Right.
So it's cool when they're like fighting people and Kara's just like taking off people and Wildcat's in there punching everybody. It's almost like Wildcat's getting pissed off because she's so powerful. But Cool issue, man.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to at some point read a lot of these later All-Star comics, because, I mean, I own one, just random issue, number 64. I saw at the flea market one day. You know, it's not in any great shape, or, you know, it's probably a dollar or something like that. But, you know, I'd like to read these.
Well, I thought you'd get a kick out of the Star-Spangled Kid, because he talks about Starman being injured and kind of like passing the torch. Like he's, and it also talks about, if you remember Star-Spangled Kid, he's not even from Earth 2. He's from another Earth.
Yes, yeah.
So, like, he came from the Seven Soldiers of Victory. So he's, like, depressed because Stripesy, like, quit and – he can't get to, like, his buddies are from another Earth, and they were brought to a world that he's not even from. Like, he's like, I'm not from here. I knew the Shining Knight. I knew the Crimson Avenger. And now I'm in this world with these old JSA heroes, you know?
Exactly.
And, like, he met up with Starman, and Starman passed on the Cosmic Rod. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. This is good history right here.
That is awesome. Yeah. I like that. Very cool.
Yep. So what else you got?
I don't have a lot, but, you know, we can talk a little about the movie that I saw, but I saw that we have some questions, so did you want to do the questions?
Oh, yeah, we could do the questions real quick.
I'll have to look for it again. You can probably find it faster than me since you're the one that asked.
Yeah, I just have to go to my page. Okay, so Michael Batesel, who's my friend, MBATS, he says, what is your opinion of the Mark Waid Flash stuff with Wally? Is it an all-timer run in comics or just meh? I know why he's asking this, because I saw him post yesterday that he bought, I think, Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Oh, yeah, he says that, yeah.
So he bought the first two collected. Is it the top three Flash run? What is the best Flash? I think we talked about this in Gotham by Geeks. Where we ranked our creators.
You mean Central City by, I don't remember.
We had an April Fool's episode, and I would say he's like second for me. Like, Mark Waid is right behind Jeff Johns. So, like, Jeff Johns' Flash is my favorite.
I'm 100% with you. I think it's a great take. He wrote it before Jeff Johns, so at the time I'm like, this is the best Flash stuff that I've ever read. Mm-hmm. And then it only got better with Jeff Johns doing his run as well. But I agree with you. I think Mark Waid, it's definitely not meh. It's
well, he did the Speed really Force. Terrific. He introduced that. And also like terrific. The Flash family stuff.
And, Impulse and stuff like that.
He did all that stuff. All the great stuff. Max Mercury?
Yep, Max Mercury. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think it's one of the strongest storytellers for Flash comics.
Yeah, it's weird because most of my choices are in the second volume of Flash as far as the creative teams. The first volume, the only one that well, there's two of them that made my list. One of them, they almost wrote the whole run of Flash, but Kerry Bates, I freaking love Kerry Bates' Flash.
Mm, I agree.
That's how I got into the Flash. Like,
me too.
Kerry Bates is the shit. Like, that guy, as a kid growing up, he made these stories so imaginative, and they just, I got hooked.
Flash? Once I found out about the Flash, because, you know, when you think about when I was, you know, very, very young, you knew from the Super Friends, you kind of, you know, you knew Batman, Robin, Superman, Wonder Woman, Aquaman. So I didn't really even know who the Flash was until I was able to start buying some like, comic books and, like, Justice League comic books and stuff like that. And as soon as I saw the Flash, he became my favorite character.
Yeah, he is my favorite character.
And so I started buying him regularly towards when it was just before, like I missed when he actually accidentally killed the Reverse Flash.
Oh,
but I got everything like after that, leading up and into the trial and all that. And so it was probably only maybe 20 issues before, you know, the run ended that I actually bought off the shelf. And then, of course, you know, I picked up with Wally. But yeah, I mean, the Flash, he's definitely my favorite superhero.
Yeah, me too. So yeah, that was a good question. Kerry Bates and John Broom, and that they're awesome, but Kerry Bates is what hooked me. He hooked me into Barry. Yeah. And what really, you know, like, if there's one issue that I must have read about like 25 times when I was a kid or younger, and I'm trying to find out which one it is, but it's one that says you're cordially invited to this costume party or something, and it's the death mm-hmm. of Iris West.
Oh.
I'm trying to find the cover, and I'm not
either a Justice League or a Brave and the Bold.
No, it's here. I just it's.
I Are you sure?
I think it's right before the trial.
All right, because for some reason that sounds really familiar to me.
It's gonna drive me crazy until I find it, but I'm getting too early. Is it like 258? No, it's not 258. Although that's a time period I was really loving. Kerry Bates was still writing it.
He wrote it forever, didn't he?
Yeah, him and John Broom almost wrote the whole first series.
Which is crazy. From beginning
to end. Yeah. If I think of it while you're talking about your movie,
after you're done,
I'll mention it.
It just interrupts too big in case you, just so you don't. Oh,
let's go to the next question real quick.
Okay, yeah, he's got a second part to that.
What is the best Flash? Also, what is your opinion of Robinson Starman? that's a funny question because you're digging into it. I was missing two issues. I was missing an annual and one single issue, and I just finished it.
Did you get them?
I just bought it from my comic shop just, I don't know, about 2 months ago.
Nice.
So now I have the full
run. That annual was a great annual, The Legends of the Dead Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good annual. I really enjoyed it.
Like that's on your like shelf of top-notch comics, right? Like that's one of your favorites.
It is seriously, for a closed run, for me, that is my favorite superhero story that had a beginning and an end. But I see that he's saying that he's kind of bored reading it.
Yeah.
So I have to say to Michael that obviously he did something wrong in his life and he needs to get that straightened out so he can enjoy this wonderful. No, but seriously, if he,
it won't click for everybody.
Right. If he's bored with it, I would probably not recommend him continuing on just for the sake of it. I don't know how far he is into it, but if he's read like the whole first, like, let's say volume, like 16 issues or something like that.
And he doesn't like it by then. He's not going to like it.
He's not going to like it. Exactly. Yeah. That's how I feel. I wouldn't recommend somebody continuing with it if they're that far along, 10 or more issues. Because honestly, with that particular book,
if it doesn't grab you in the first six.
Yeah, you're not going to. It's not going to grab you. Then. It's just not for you then.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. But I think we both know who our favorite Flash is. I know who yours is because I think you've been asked several times.
Yeah, it's Wally.
Mine's the same. Yeah, Wally, for sure.
It's not even close, though. Like,
no, not like, for me.
I have some great stories of Barry, but there's so much personality that's injected into Wally that it's not even a competition.
He just had a really rich history from being
the kid,
a young kid, yeah,
and the Teen Titan with, you know, and then Flash,
yeah, and those great writers like you were talking about, Mark Waid and Jeff Johns, just really fleshing him out. And even before that with, was it Mesner Loebs?
Yeah.
Like, you know, keep on. Yeah, he went through a whole period of like constantly comparing himself to Barry and finally having to, you know, realize I'm a different person. I can't keep comparing myself. I'm going to kind of be my own hero, you know, but that took a long time and it was really well done the way they developed him. So it's kind of different than Barry, who was, you know, well, it was Flash right from like the second page of the first issue he appeared in.
Sure.
Was what he was doing.
So tell us about the movie you watched, or movies.
So have you seen, I saw quite a while ago, I saw The Evil Dead. And then I saw The Evil Dead 2 last night / this morning because I actually couldn't keep my eyes open.
The one where he beats the hell out of himself?
Yes.
Splits into multiple ashes?
Yeah. Yeah, he kept on banging. He kept on breaking
I saw dishes over his head. I saw that one originally at a drive-in.
Yeah, so he kept on breaking dishes over his head and stuff because his hand was possessed.
Yeah.
So then he ended up having to chainsaw off his hand.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of that that particular movie, he ends up, you know, attaching the chainsaw to his hand.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, I believe it or not, I have never seen Evil Dead 2 before last night.
Did you see Army of Darkness, the third one?
I have never seen Army of Darkness.
Wow, that's incredible, especially with your background. When did you see Evil Dead?
About a year ago.
Two, really?
Probably more than that, but it wasn't that long ago. Maybe
Evil Dead blew me away because I saw that on VHS in high school with a bunch of my basketball friends.
See, that's what I'm kind of thinking, that if I had seen it years ago, I would have appreciation. Because I'll be honest, to see Evil Dead 2, I didn't really care much for it. It was a little too slapsticky for me for a horror movie. But having said that,
it's not a horror movie. It's more like camp.
It's camp, which I kind of knew from the first movie, but it still was too campy for me to really, really enjoy. But I did, like, I watched a bunch of it, and then, like I said, I just couldn't stay awake. So this morning when I woke up, I watched the last half hour.
Yeah.
And maybe part of it was that I was so sleepy because I did enjoy the last half hour more than I had enjoyed the first hour of it.
Did you enjoy the first movie?
Not really.
Really? Because that was scared.
Way.
That scared me. That
it just
I
seemed
that
too
was
silly for me.
It was not. It took itself a little more seriously, I thought.
It was a
bunch of people that went to a cabin, and then they find the Necronomicon, and they unfortunately start playing that record back and.
They
bring back the demons, and then they get picked off one by one by one, and they have these crazy, like, possessed dead, like, where their heads are spinning and they're moving fast, and I don't know, it creeped me out when I first watched it.
Well, you know, I didn't, it's not that I disliked it, but it just wasn't, I guess, not what I expected, because I didn't know that one was... I mean, it's still campy, but you're right. It's more serious of a tone. But this – also, I couldn't quite understand how this relates to the first one, and I'm not sure if it does at all. This number two to number one. Because it's the same thing.
It really relates through Ash, right?
Yeah, because he just drives a girlfriend into through the woods into a cabin as well.
Yeah.
And then she gets killed and possessed. So it's like almost like the same type.
And then Army of Darkness just gets even more.
Right, because that's how this one ended.
But that's kind of what made Bruce Campbell. I mean.
Yes, absolutely.
It made him an icon of cult movie because of his over the top. I mean, he's got the show on Showtime now.
Yeah.
And I watched the first season, and it's really good. I mean, well,
is it good?
It's really good if you like that.
Yeah,
I mean, you're not getting like horror, like I'm gonna get scared. You're getting like horror in a campy fashion, like,
but
in a comedy, in a comic delivery of it.
Here's the thing, is that I totally think that a lot of it has to do with when you watch it for the first time. But, and that's not to say that it's not good. It's that I don't have that same appreciation. Like, well, with me having seen so many movies and then watching this one after, rather than seeing it early and be like, you know, kind of going through the development of, because like the Return of the Living Dead, I saw when I was 14 and I love it.
But it's that's campy as hell.
Absolutely. And that's what I mean, is that I think it has to do with my age. Like seeing something when you're like 40 rather than when you're experiencing a lot of this stuff for the very first time in your life.
Well, let me ask you this. I think I've seen everything in Evil Dead. Did you watch the remake of Evil Dead?
No. No. Was it? What kind of tone was that?
That tone is not – it's a darker tone.
Is it?
Yeah. It doesn't have the camp. At least I don't remember it having the camp.
Maybe I'll check that one out.
It's from 2013.
Yeah, I remember it was pretty recent.
Well, the original, I don't know. I don't know. If you don't like the original, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough to recommend something if you don't like the source.
I think my problem.
And like IMDb give Evil Dead like a 7.5 out of 10, and then the remake they give like a 6. So
right, if you get a 6 or more as a horror movie, that's really good.
Well, it's a 6.5, so
like the original one is like 7 something.
Yeah,
I mean that is top notch when it comes to horror. Because that is very polarizing.
Well, this movie, when it came out, it broke a genre, in my opinion. It's one of the top. It was one of those original cult classics, like instantaneous. Like my friends and I watched it at least 6 times. Like, go to the video store, go get it again, kind of thing. And that drove us to the drive-in to see the sequel, and then I think I was with Barb when we saw the third one. But we saw them all in the theater. I even saw not the first one I watched on VHS. The second one I saw at the drive-in. The third one I saw at the theater. And then the remake I saw at the theater. And now I'm watching the Showtime thing on Showtime.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
You grade movies a little different than I would grade movies. Like, what you would rate a 6, I'm probably an 8.
Yeah.
In most cases, like
I'm converting them, and 6 sounds really low. But if I say, like when you always talked about the Netflix scale, if I convert that, then that'd be a 3 out of 5, where like I enjoyed it, but
yeah, I just love it. I love the Netflix scale. When you translate a 3 out of 5 and just say I liked it, that just means you sat through it and you enjoyed it.
Yep.
You didn't like really like it because that would be a 4, and you didn't love it because that's a 5. But,
like I'll
but
say
when you grade something a 6 out of 5, I think the brain kicks off and thinks of a D.
Yeah. Right. But
65%.
Exactly.
And
but I'm not saying
when
that,
you grow up taking. school, if you get a 65, not in college, sometimes a 65 in college is an A, but
yeah,
on the curve, but if you get a 65 in high school or whatever, that's a D.
Yeah, you're not doing well.
You're gonna flunk.
Exactly. Basically, like I convert it to the Netflix in so an 8 or more are movies that I would buy on DVD to watch again. So if I rate something a 6 or a 7, I enjoyed it, but I probably wouldn't buy, like, purchase it.
Yeah.
That's weird. Oh, by the way. No, go ahead. Finish your thought.
I'm kind of surprised that it didn't click with you, because you obviously can shift in time. Like, you don't have, I don't think you have a problem with watching old horror movies. Like,
No, I love
you're
old horror.
able to not compare them with today's CGI. You know what I mean? Like, you're able to watch a horror movie for what it is, and the fact that you don't like it kind of surprises me, but
I honestly think that
because it's
part
a
of it,
1981 piece, and
I
there's
think part of it is I'm watching these when I'm too tired. I
yeah,
think that that's a big part of it.
it could be. It
And the
could
reason
be.
why I say
But the
that
fact
is
that
that
you
this
saw
morning,
two, even tired, it's like one of those things, like, why don't you like Starman, right? Like,
but Mike,
maybe it's not for you.
yeah, but Mike, I woke up this morning, I watched the last half hour. I thought that last hour, half hour was good, and I was refreshed.
Yeah,
I was hey.
that's true. That's true.
So it, I don't know. I'm gonna have to. I think I'm gonna have to watch these when I'm more fresh because I'm having a lot of trouble
Yeah.
staying awake. Just it's just
That's
getting up
weird.
too
Yeah,
early in the morning. That's what it is.
do you have trouble sleeping?
No.
Okay.
No. I just get up too early for work every day,
Yeah.
and used to be able to kind of
But
recoup for the kids.
why do you get up early for work
I
every day?
start at 7,
Okay,
so
so
I'm up by 5:15,
okay. But
just to get
you get
ready and
up, when you say you
start
get
up.
up too early, does that mean you could get up at 6 and still make it?
Oh no, no, it's just that because of the time that I start, it's just that's the time I just need to get up to be ready on time.
Oh, that's
To
early. See, I'm more of a 8:30, 9 o'clock morning
yeah
guy. You
yeah
could probably tell,
it's just way too early.
but
And then
I
before the
do have
kids I would
trouble.
sleep in.
I do have trouble. Like, I'll wake up. I'll go to bed at like 10. That's pretty early. That's almost like what time you're at now. Okay. So like I'll go to bed that early, and then I'll like get up like bright. Like I'm up at 4 a.m. and I'm like, what the fuck? I can't go back to sleep.
Is
So
your
I.
what is your mind running or something, or are you just
Well, it's either running or racing because of
yeah.
work or something, or I'm thinking of a problem or whatever. Or it's just I'm done. Like I'm done sleeping. Like I think I gotta go tend to the chickens or something, or I don't know. I got the farmer thing going on lately.
That's
But
funny.
anyway, I got one more, and I'm gonna kind of race through this. But
Okay.
this also came out of the Guardians of the
Mike,
Galaxy.
before you do it, I want to tell you that the comic book that you were talking about was Flash 275.
Oh, thanks. I gave up on it.
I was looking through it. It's got the cover exactly how like I thought, but for some reason I thought it was a Justice League like
Yeah, it's like
when
your court. It's got Batgirl on it, right? Like,
Yep, yeah, because
yeah,
Iris Dress is
it's
Batgirl.
Batgirl, and he and
Spirit
Flash is
Dress
the
is Flash.
Flash, and it's actually the death of Iris West. But I love this cover. Like,
Yeah, it's a good cover.
none of those characters are really the real character except for Flash.
Exactly.
And it's Reverse Flash is in this sucker, so it's pretty amazing story. I had to read it again, but really cool. I like this issue.
Yeah.
I've read it about 20 times. I remember some of the panels like in my brain. They're ingrained in there. But I read Marvel Superheroes number 18. And this is the first appearance of the Guardians of the Galaxy.
We've got a theme going.
Yeah. And I don't own this. I read it in a. What are these things called? There's like a name of these. And this is Volume 24 of it. Oh, Marvel Premiere Classic. Volume 24 is. And I looked up this stuff. And I know the. At one time, I was tempted to buy the whole series because the guy from Collected Comics Library, Chris Marshall, I think his name is Chris Marshall, he was selling it on eBay. And these are really nice hardcovers. They're not real big, and the size is really nice, and I really like it. But Guardians of the Galaxy. I wanted to revisit the original guys, Martin X, Charlie, what is his name, 27, Vance Astro, and Yondu. Those are the original Guardians of the Galaxy.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and the thing I didn't rem I, this is the first time I've read it. Because when I started reading Guardians of the Galaxy, it was in the Jim Valentino time frame. So
Right.
I like knew a different set. Like Starhawk was always, I thought he was going to be in this. I was really surprised. Like I knew Charlie 27 was, I knew Martin X, and I knew Yondu was. And the one I didn't know was Vance Astro. I actually thought it was going to be Starhawk because that's the guy I knew.
Yeah.
And this is a an interesting concept. It takes place in like the future, like in the 3000s, and let's see, the year 3007. And Charlie 27's basically coming home from a mission, and he gets there and he can't find his family. Like, nope, everybody's gone. He's like, what the hell? And the Badoon, which is an alien race, has taken over the planet and is putting all its people into slaves. So he's like, my father and my, is going to be a prisoner in a slavery camp. And he can't even find the rest of his family, but he does see his father. So he's like, I'm going to go rescue my father. And then the Badoon almost take him out. And they have these weird, like, light speed beams that can transport you almost anywhere, but if you calibrate it. So he like jumps into one of these beams and he doesn't know where the hell it's gonna take him. Well, it takes him to Pluto, and like so he's on Jupiter. So like Jupiter's mass, you know how it's a big gas planet or whatever. He's like huge, and his strength is like amazing because of the gravity of Jupiter. Well, he ends up on Pluto and he meets up with Martin X, who's like a crystal-like being, and his world's been enslaved. And he has the weird ability, like his right hand can do like human torch heat and his left hand can do heat. I don't know if I got the sides right, but you get the idea. And he's under the same situation. And he's like, man, all my people are captured or dead. We need to escape from the Badoon. So they get into the beam and they basically blast themselves across space and they end up on Earth. And that's where they meet Vance Astro. In Vance Astro, you get an origin story, like from the beginning to the end. Like he was an astronaut in our time in the 80s. Even though this book was in the 70s, they had jumped it forward to the 80s.
Oh, really?
And he was an astronaut in the future that they pretty much took all his blood out, like, and replaced it with some like fluid, and then they launched him into space. And they said, "Well, when you wake up, your blood will be replaced back into you, so you'll live." But while this happened, they discovered light speed and all this other stuff. So he was like frozen in time, and he comes back, and he's like, "Oh, what the hell?" But he was still a hero because he's like, well, you were a pioneer in discovering stuff that got us farther, even though you are a man out of time and we got farther than you ever did. And he gained some kind of like weird abilities, like mental psychic abilities while he was out there. And his costume looks really weird. Like it doesn't look like Vance Astro. Like if you Google Vance Astro, he was in the New Mutants and other stuff, and then he had like a costume with like he would carry Captain America's shield back in the day. And
Yeah, I can totally picture it in my head.
yeah, this guy looks like in a purple suit. He looks very weird. And even Charlie 27 looks like he's in like some big old astronaut suit. He doesn't look like the Charlie 27 of the Jim Valentino costume. And then Yondu kind of looks like Yondu, and he is really close to what you see in Guardians of the Galaxy. You know the arrow, that little arrow that he like whistles and can control it. It's the same concept, except he has a bow in it. He has to launch it in a bow and arrow. But once he launches it, he could start whistling and control the arrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, in this one, it doesn't really talk to him. It talks to his abilities, and he met Vance Astro in space in an adventure, I guess, that you'll see in the future. Because I went to Wikipedia and I was like, well, where did he, how did he get with Vance Astro? Because he's on Earth. So I thought Yandu was going to be from another planet, because we got Martin X from Pluto. You know, what's his name from Jupiter? I'm like, where's Yandu from? Well, he's from some other galaxy that Vance Astro ran into when he was an astronaut. So that's controlled by the Badoon, and the world is pretty much totaled, and they decide to become the Guardians of the Galaxy to take down the Badoon.
Now, is Yandu just a regular hero in this? Not like I almost said Merle, but not like Michael Rooker is in the...
Michael Rooker, I really like. Like, he is so good. Like, if you go to, like, Cliffhanger and watch him and Walking Dead, I like the character. I like the actor.
But is Yondu this the same way in the comic?
Yeah, he belongs to the Ravagers, which are like space pirates.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it does take that history into it too. But they form an oath to kind of take down the Badoon. And that's how it ends. And this volume is weird because, like, I don't know if this is really, like, this happened in the 70s or 60s. I can't remember. It was a 25-cent double-sized issue. And if you look at Marvel Superheroes, it's an interesting title because they put new content in and then they show reprints.
Mm-hmm.
So they have, like, two reprints of other issues in the volume, which aren't collected in this because this is Guardians of the Galaxy. It's the same sort of thing we're talking about.
Yeah.
But then it jumps to the 25-cent issue, which was Marvel 2-in-1, The Thing and Captain America. So the next issue should be really interesting to read on what it has to do with the Guardians of the Galaxy. Looks like The Thing and Captain America and the Inhumans to me. So it must end that and then jump into the next issue, because that's kind of what Marvel 2-in-1 did. So we'll see what that one does. But
interesting.
Really cool collected edition. I like it.
Well, that's cool. So we had kind of a Guardians of the Galaxy focus today.
Yeah, we did.
Realizing it.
And there's one more question. I totally spaced it.
Sure.
So let's tackle it, and then I'll let you get to bed.
All right, that sounds good.
So he says, talk a little bit about the Teen Titans changed the world back when the X-Men ruled the world. This would be a good question for you because you're a good X-Men fan. What was your reaction for when Robin became Nightwing?
I remember I was pretty young still when that issue came out, because I remember I was buying I was starting to buy New Teen Titans whenever I could see it at the convenience store.
Yeah.
But I think even then it was either it was just about to or just become Tales of the Teen Titans. It was still the original stories. They didn't start the reprints yet.
Yeah.
But I think they changed the name.
Sure.
So for me, I think I was so brand new with a lot of these heroes. Obviously, I knew who Robin was, but it didn't make that much difference to me that he was calling himself. I mean, I thought it was cool, but I don't really, at my age, I didn't appreciate the historical aspect of that.
It, what it reminded me of is like Spider-Man No More, like where he's throwing his costume in the garbage.
Yeah.
It was, except it was Robin now, and he's like, you know, I don't need to be under my father's, you know, Bruce's purview anymore.
Right.
I'm going to do something on my own. And that's what he did. And then that's why the mantle passed to Jason, you know? So, yeah, I liked it. It's one of those legacy things. Like, hey, I got to move on. I'll give my legacy to somebody else. I'm going to be my own person. So, yeah, I really liked it. My first new Teen Titans was actually DC Comics Presents number 26 or whatever it was, with Green Lantern making Kryptonite on the cover. And trying to kill Superman, but
Oh, wow.
it was one of those 8-page inserts, which is their first appearance. And
Yeah.
I read that and I was like, wow. But at the time, I couldn't find the comic. So I would get like 4 and 7 and 8. This is like a drugstore thing, right?
Yep,
I
absolutely.
get what I could get until I found Don's Paperback Bookstore. And by the time I found that, they had split the series into Tales, you talked about it, Tales of the Teen Titans, and the Baxter series, which was Teen Titans. Or Titans, I can't remember what it was. But when they did the Baxter series, so that's when I started getting into it hardcore, is when they actually split it. And like, just to give you a frame of reference, I read a lot of this stuff, but I didn't own like number 3, I think, which is the first appearance of Deathstroke until like, I don't know, 10 years ago. So that
Yeah, I still don't know that.
give you a perspective of how long it took me to fill that issue, and it was already expensive. You know what I
Oh
mean?
yeah. It's funny because during that time frame, we only have a few years, but what are you, 47?
Yeah.
48? 47?
47.
So there's only 3 years, but are you going to be 48 this year?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's 4 years difference, and that's a lot when you're, at this time when you're a kid, because really when that first title, that first series ended in 1984, I was only 12.
Yeah.
So I was only starting to get into the more, I'll call them, they were obscure to me at the time because they weren't readily available a lot at convenience stores or drug stores. But I remember the very first Titans book that I bought just happened to be New Teen Titans Annual number 3, which was, I
Yeah.
think, the last part of the Judas contract. So I had no reference for what any of this was. I only knew it was absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And then anytime I could find a New Teen Titans book, like at the flea market, I would grab one. It
And
was
I
just
did
the
the
best
other
thing.
book that I bought off the spinner rack was, I mean, speaking of its relationship to Uncanny X-Men, was the New Teen Titans Uncanny X-Men crossover.
Oh, right, yeah.
A matter of fact, when I saw this, I was like, what the fuck is going on? I'm sorry my language, but I was like, why are they crossing comics? Like
Yeah.
I was just like, I had known about like Spider-Man and Superman, the giant size, but I like, why does this thing exist? So I was like in shock. I didn't even look through it. I just bought it. And it was a crappy copy. Because it is a thick book. Like it is really thick. If you do you own it?
No, I don't.
It's a thick book. And because it was on the spinner racks, the staples were already kind of, I don't know, you could see there were somebody had already looked through it and kind of they're borderline detached before I even purchased it. But it was the only one there. And I was like, if I pass up on this just because it's beat up, I'll probably never see it again. So
Yeah.
I grabbed it off the spinner rack and I fell in love with it. Like I was like, this is awesome.
Well, I would say that in terms of comparing or in relation to the X-Men, I had always been a big X-Men fan, as you know. But I was able to appreciate, even though I wasn't able to seem to find them as often, I was able to appreciate just how good the New Teen Titans were. Because, like I said, I mean, even reading just a couple issues, it hooked me. And I knew of the X-Men first, even though, I certainly didn't start reading them when the new version of the X-Men came around in issue 94. My first issue was issue 160, and that was another one where if it was available at the drugstore, then I'd buy it. But it was even that one was hit or miss. I bought like the 160 to like 164, and then it didn't show up again at the drugstore until like issue 171, like months and months later. So I loved the X-Men, but I totally agree that at that time the Titans were the quality, at least for me, was just as good. I can't say that I enjoy one more than the other because I love them both.
I did enjoy Titans more, and I my history with the X-Men is sporadic. Like, man, even when the cartoon came out, I wasn't buying X-Men. So the only X-Men that I bought was the 4-issue Wolverine miniseries off the spinner rack. I fell in love with it. That was Chris Claremont, Frank Miller.
What do you think it was about the X-Men back in, let's talk about before the cartoon, but more when you were a kid, that didn't draw you to the comic?
Man, I can't even, I don't even know. I know what the first X-Men comic is that I read.
It was, what was that?
It was the one where Warpath, or what was his brother?
Thunderbird?
Thunderbird died on the plane.
Okay, X-Men 95.
Yep. Yeah, that was my first X-Men, and I found that one in a box in somebody threw it away at the garbage dump, and I didn't even know what the cover looked like for the longest period of time, and I really liked that issue. I read the hell out of it. But for some reason, man, I would always navigate. I was more picky with Marvel than I was DC. Like, DC, I, like, wanted it all. Because I was so into, especially when
Crisis happened. Well, you love the history of it.
Well, I don't know, I didn't have a lot of money, so at the time, I'd get Flash and Justice League, like Satellite Area Justice League. And the Marvels that I navigated to was John Byrne, and this is weird because John Byrne was in the Uncanny X-Men, but it was my first exposure to John Byrne was the Fantastic Four.
I didn't get that until towards almost when he was done. And it wasn't until years and years later that I went on eBay and completed the whole John Byrne run of Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and when that came out, I don't know why I was so picky. I really don't with Marvel. Like, I didn't even get into Spider-Man into McFarlane. Like, it was way late. Like, the books that I navigated to on the Marvel side – was Cap.
Yeah.
Cap
and Cap,
Daredevil, the Defenders, huge part. Like, I would, anytime the Defenders showed up, I was like, I'm on this. So it's Cap, Daredevil, the Defenders, and Fantastic Four. Those were the titles I'd always stick with. And then when Michelini started doing Iron Man and Amazing Spider-Man, I got hooked onto those. But for some reason, man, I just never, even when the relaunches came, it's weird because my brother and I tried to diversify our purchasing by picking things. Like, we'd go like, okay, you pick a title. So I'd go like FF, I'm going to get FF, but you could read it. And yeah, what are you going to get? And he'd say, oh, I'll get Uncanny X-Men. And he was navigating to the X-Men on everything. And I was like the opposite.
Is your brother older or younger?
Younger.
Okay.
So we would switch. And then, but like for one of my birthdays, he gave me his Uncanny X-Men collection. So I own quite a bit of it. at least what he has.
It's very similar. It's funny that you say all this because it's very similar because I have a younger brother as well. And I was the comic book collector. But then when he got to a certain age, you know, I think it's kind of normal. Like he wanted to collect comic books, I think, because he saw me collecting them.
Yeah.
But he wanted to collect his own comic books rather than just buy the same ones.
That's exactly what we did. Yeah.
Yeah. So he bought a lot of titles that I didn't buy, and then when he wasn't ever a lifelong comic book collector.
Yeah.
And so at some point when he kind of got out of it, he just gave me, like, you know, he'd basically, like, get a short box and a half or something of comic books.
Yeah.
Just gave them all to me. Said, here you go. So it was very similar.
For us, it was like the 60 cent era. When we did that.
For him, it was like the dollar. It was the dollar.
Yeah, we were at the 60 cent era. And my brother, I guess, was following in my footsteps, but I don't think he enjoyed it as much as I did.
That's exactly how,
like,
we were.
He just, we were in different, we're 4 years apart, 3 years apart. And he kind of, at that time, there was other things. The Atari was taken off, you know?
Yeah.
And he had other interests that, you know, I was into those things, but comics were always first and foremost. Like, they were my number one source to this day. Like, if I had to choose a medium, it would be comic books. Like, I choose it over movies. I choose it over TV. There's nothing even close. Video games.
Yeah.
But for my brother, it was probably... My brother was very different. We're like light and day. I'm more of an introvert. But I'm not shy. I'm not shy. But I'm more of an introvert, and he's an extrovert.
It is crazy because so many things that you're saying is just like the two of us. We're 3 years apart also.
Yeah.
He really, as he grew older, he really started focusing more on athletics and sports and stuff.
Yeah.
And I really wasn't as interested in that. And it's funny. It's just like, you know, comic books was something that he did for a while, like a lot of kids did. And
but
then
for me,
you know, we got a little older, and then he was done.
It was a little different, too, because I was into sports.
Yeah, I remember you saying
I was
basketball.
Totally into sports, and my brother wasn't. So,
oh,
like,
wow.
I played basketball. I played football. I played baseball. And my brother played Little League when I played Little League. But in high school, he did track, and that was it, and he didn't even stick with it. And for me, it was basketball, up until my senior year. But I was hardcore into sports, and I never stopped collecting comics. And I never got, like my friends that were jocks, they would come over and read comics. They didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
They were like, they never said, "You still buy comics?" Like, You saw that, like, you always see these in the documentaries, like, being a geek was, like, awful back in the day, right?
Yep.
For me, I never experienced that.
See,
because I was a geek. My basketball team in high school knew I had a glass case that had all the Mego dolls I had.
Mm-hmm.
And they never came in and said, "What the fuck are you playing with dolls for?" You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they would go into my closet, and they would know that I had all the Star Wars figures in the case, like a carrying case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I never had any.
They pissed me off one time, too, because we went on a vacation, and my neighborhood friend was taking care of our house, and he was in the basketball team as well, but he was 1 year younger than me. So he was, if I was in the JV, he was in the C team. Like 1 year behind.
Mm-hmm.
And we were gone, and he did something, and the only way I found out is I found, like, cracker remnants in our ColecoVision. So I was like, what the hell's going on? And then, like, I went through my comic books, and they were all out of order. They were out of the bags. They were, like, not even put back to where they were. And I'm like, I brought him over. I said, "Martin, what did you do?" I said, "Everything that I had was there is in different spots." Like, they didn't take anything.
Yeah.
It was just disturbed, and I knew it was disturbed.
What were they doing? Just reading them?
Yeah.
It's funny.
But, I never experienced that. Did you experience that?
I really wasn't. I would not say that I went around and publicized that I was reading comic books. Like, wasn't anything that, like, would necessarily come. Well, yeah, it didn't really come up, you know.
Yeah.
But anyone that knew it, nobody cared. I really wasn't picked on. For whatever reason, I was, I don't know what my deal was in school, but it's like I needed to be somewhat friendly with like every group. So I was in a lot of the, like, you know, smart kid classes.
We're but, like, a lot, we are so much a lot alike.
All the kids
have a lot of personality things that are similar because I fit into every clique.
Like that's why
I wasn't picking. I can't explain why. I was in the working class kids that worked during high school, so I knew class.
Yep.
And usually they were segregated, like they weren't jocks, but I was a jock, so I was into sports.
And see, that's the only thing
I had the friends that were the good grades because I always made good grades. Mm-hmm. So we were in the advanced math classes and all that stuff.
In school, when we're not in class, I would like to hang out with the quote-unquote bad kids.
Yeah.
But I've never smoked a cigarette in my life.
I never did any
drugs. But all of the kids around me that I would just hang out with, like whether it's on the bus on the way home or whatever, those were those kids.
Right.
So I thought they were really cool. And we listened to the same type of music because I liked heavy metal. They liked all of that music. But I didn't do any of that stuff. But yet it seemed like I had my toe enough in. Even though I never was involved with sports, like none of like the kids that were really interested in sports, they never gave me a hard time or anything at all, you know?
And it's weird that you say that because we have that so much in common. Everybody that I was around would smoke or drink. You know, I didn't touch alcohol until my senior year in college. And it was just because I met a French-Canadian guy who was drinking since he was 16, and we used to study together. But
I probably have you beat for probably maybe only like a year or two, because I probably was more like a sophomore or something in college.
Yeah. So I didn't drink anything, and that's probably why I didn't like it. But the other interesting thing that I find fascinating with drugs and alcohol is I never, not once by my peers, did I get peer pressured to do it.
Nope.
Even though it was around me throughout high school. It's like they appreciated, like, God bless my friends, because there was never do this or you're not cool kind of thing. Never.
Mike, I've never experienced that either. As a matter of fact, I still remember because I thought I was shocked. I still remember this to this day. We were in homeroom before, you know, each class began. And so in homeroom, somebody said to me, one of the kids that I think it was in one of the like honors types classes said something and asked me or said something about me, like, am I doing drugs or am I doing whatever? One of the kids that I was friends with that did smoke and did drugs, before I had a chance to answer, he basically stood up and said, no, he doesn't.
Yeah.
As if he was defending me rather than pressuring me. You know what I mean? It was really – I'm like, oh, my God, that's kind of cool that I'm friends with this guy. He knows – he doesn't. But – he's like almost defending me on this. It was really, really interesting.
And that's why I think I'm really unique because I don't drink. I don't smoke. I think it has a lot to do with the friends I grew up with. I was always taught by my parents it was wrong, so I just never did it.
Yeah.
And I never felt any pressure from any friend.
Neither did I. To do it.
Nobody asked me. Okay, it's wrong, but I'm not going to go preach to them that it is.
Right.
And they left me alone.
And they probably appreciated that you were preaching to them too.
Yeah.
I remember walking to the back of the bus, and there was one kid a year or two older, and like, you know, we've been I'd be sitting back there for quite some time, so they knew who I was and stuff. And he's like, "Hey, man, do you get high?" I go, "No." And he just like smirks at me and goes, "Yeah, neither do I." But he did, of course, all the time.
Yeah.
But like it was that was the most pressure that I got is simply somebody asking me if I did. And then when I said no, they were totally cool with it and jumped. You know what I mean? So it was fine. It was fine.
And then when I was already in college and I experienced it, I didn't like the fact that I didn't know everything that was going on. Like, like I didn't like the fact that I was loopy or like I couldn't, like I was aware of everything, but it would degrade it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I was like, why do I want, I was never a kid that was ever depressed. I would get stressed, but I was never like down on myself or I always tried to endure whatever trial was put in front of me. I think my biggest stress ever was college, obviously the grades, college is pretty freaking stressful. Like that is probably the most stressful part of my life.
I can see why yours was because of the type of classes that you took.
Well,
mine was easier than high school. But
it was anxiety and a double E degree is pretty kind of tough.
I can't even imagine.
It's pretty stressful, so it brought a lot of stress. But before that, in high school, I didn't have stress. I always think that in high school, I was in courses that I needed to be challenged a little more, I think.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't, like, stressed about it. So like, yeah, I could do all the activities, but I didn't, like, stress out about it. The one thing I did stress out about was losing my position on the basketball team. That gave me more anxiety than anything in my life at that time, because this was my family. Like these people I was with were like, I was with for 20 hours out of the day. I mean, just about.
Yeah.
And I knew that if I didn't make the team and I quit my senior year because the coach pretty much said, yeah, you've dedicated your life to this team, so I'm not going to cut you, but I'm not going to guarantee you any playing time at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically had to make the decision, do I go through this torture and not ever play, or, you know, and I decided to leave. But that gave me, like, huge anxiety.
Oh, I can imagine that.
And it was always anxious for me because I'm like 5'2".
Mm-hmm.
To be on a basketball team at 5'2"
exactly
is so hard. I mean, you have to do everything faster and smarter than everybody else on the team just to stay there.
Because at that point, they're probably just about a foot taller than you, if not more.
Right. You even have to, like, my best year was my freshman year because I didn't have a big delta.
Yeah.
So I didn't even have to play point guard. I could play shooting wing and I was scoring 20 points a game. I had no problem.
Yeah.
And then I knew things were changing and I had to be a point guard. And literally I was a shooter. I wasn't a guy to like dribble and control the flow of the game. I was not that, but I had to become that, and that gave me anxiety too. but it's interesting how we have similar experiences when you hear so much of the other stuff.
Because you're right. We never really, which is great, but never experienced that type of pressure.
Yeah. And a lot of the people that were in gangs and stuff, I knew too because of work. I worked at McDonald's. They did too.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it was like I was off. I had a free pass with them. You know what I mean? I was
their
co-workers.
Yeah. Exactly.
I was never going to be touched.
Yep.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah. Well, you've been listening to Geek Brunch Retrocast. Rob has to go to bed.
Yeah, I better go to bed soon.
Get the crack of dawn there.
Ooh.
And you can reach Rob Krieger, just like Bob Seger, at Rob Krieger on Twitter. And I'm at Mike Myers Brunch. And you can go to our Facebook page at Geek Brunch Podcast. And website is geekbrunchpodcast.com. You got anything else you want to mention?
No, I think that's it.
Oh, a good job on the Marvel episode. I heard you on Ultimate Marvel Podcast.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
I was happy because they poke around in the multimedia a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you brought the comics back, and I was like, yeah!
Because yeah, I wanted to talk
when it comes to talk about it, like, I'll listen to it, but the thing I care about is the comics.
Yeah. I'm the same way. It's like you're similar that, you know, you're quite behind on the TV shows, the Netflix shows.
Yeah, it's just because it's lower priority.
I'm behind on the TV shows. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it's the comics that I'm, you know, I love to hear them talk about regardless. But yeah, the comics are what I'm most interested in.
Yeah, so I was glad that you brought the comics back at least for one episode.
Yeah. It's fun.
All right. But, have a good week. And
yeah,
I'll
and hopefully
talk to you
soon. Chris can join us next time around. I'm sure. He'll be
yeah.
Able
what
to.
what I'm gonna try to do, I'm gonna try to record one with him next week, even though you're off.
Oh, good.
Because I have a feeling that I'm gonna be gone the week after.
Oh, like, really?
Well, I actually know I'm going to be. So, like, I have relatives coming into town, so I know I'm not.
What is that? The
21st? Yeah, it's the week. I know I'm going to be out like the 15th through the 21st, I think.
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I because I'm not available on the 21st either, so. It's
yeah.
A good...
So I, if he's willing to, I'm going to try to do another one just because I'd like and when I'm not around. If you guys record one, I don't know if you have the ability to record. But I'd actually love for you guys to keep the wheels rolling, you know?
Well, I wanted to, but like I said, it seemed like
he's been busy.
He's been busy. The mornings, the normal time frame, just this whole month in April was crazy. So I couldn't do it the normal time frame. I could have done it in any of the afternoons or evenings, but that's when he wasn't available. So it just didn't work out.
Right.
But yeah, I wanted to. I you know, I mean, me and him, you know, recorded quite a few times before, just the two of us. So that wouldn't have been a problem. We just couldn't make it work.
I just know that his recorder went south around the same time my recorder went south, and I don't know if he ever recouped.
I thought he did, but we'd have to check. Yeah, and then I can always add one too. You can point me in the right direction, so you have backup.
Yeah.
You know,
we might want to do that, even if. Even if you don't ever have to drive the ship.
Yep.
Just as a backup.
I think so, too.
Because, like, even today, if I didn't test the recorder before I was on with Bill,
mm-hmm.
I would have been screwed. Because I tested it, and it was only catching my voice, like, with the
Skype.
Oh, my
Skype God. Could you imagine?
Yeah, 4 hours.
4 hours?
Yeah. So, like, having a backup is a good plan. I usually, like, even before this episode, I tested it. Ever since I went to the new headset and the new version of Skype and lost my Pretty May, I don't trust it anymore. Before, it was, like, a guarantee. Like, I never had to worry. And I never upgraded for years. And then it forced me to. And I don't even like this recorder because this recorder, for some reason, and I've noticed it on Daryl's too, and you probably don't notice this, but I do. Mm. When we do Gotham by Geeks, our volumes are all higher, but his is lower.
Oh, I notice because if I'm driving in the car listening to it, it's clear as anything for all of you guys, and then he'll start covering his book.
Yeah.
It's like I can't hear anything. I have to turn it way, way up.
And that's exactly what happens when I record with this new recorder.
Yeah, I have noticed that now.
If you listen to me and Daryl, or if you listen to me and Bill, his volume will be up and mine will be down. So I do a little editing to boost the volume, but he's always higher. And I don't want to have to listen to the whole episode and boost these little segments. I'll boost, like, big segments, but not every little segment. So It drives me crazy. When I was on Pretty May, never had it. Crystal clear. Never had to edit it or anything. Never had to boost or amplify. So it's frustrating, but... that's weird that you noticed it too, though. Like,
no, I definitely did. It's just...
I think it's the recorder, because me and him have the same recorder.
It's got to be then.
And, like, when I record with him, his volume's up and I'm down. And it's my copy. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. So it's
so,
whoever's...
Yeah, but... it's got to be the recorder.
Yeah, it has to be. But yeah, I only notice it because if I'm not using earphones, it's just, it's drastic.
Well, I like listening to podcasts in the morning. Like, I'll turn it on when I'm in the shower.
Me too, yeah.
And I'll miss a lot. I listen to Gotham by Geeks when I'm not on, and I haven't been on a lot because it's a little different for me when we have time differentials.
Yes.
Because I'm just getting out of work when they're already recording. So
yeah, exactly.
It's like I just bail out. So I'll listen to the last two I'm not on, so I'll listen to the episodes. But I noticed that.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll let you go because you got to get to bed. It was great talking to you. I'm glad we got to record.
Yeah,
and,
it was fun.
We have a lot of common. Interesting. I mean, there was some interesting discussion that wasn't comic related that I had a good time learning about.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well, have a good one, Rob, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, take care, Mike.
All right, bye.